please. And at this time, this call is being recorded, and you may begin.
Can I do the roll call, Alan?
Yes, please.
Good morning. Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
We have on the call today Carol Langdonore, Michael Pelage, Alan Greenberg, Michelle Nayland, Barry Cobb, Mason Cole, James Bladel, Jeff Eckhouse, Elaine Doolin, Philip Corwin, and Karim Atumani. For staff, we have Marika Koenig, Margie Milam, and myself, Glenda Saint-Jerry. And have I left off anybody? Is anybody on Adobe Connect that hasn't been mentioned? I don't think so. And we have a problem. Paul Diaz, Sergey Gorbunov, and Mike O'Connor. Has anybody else recorded any apologies? As well as William McKillicott from staff.
There are a number of people on the Adobe that are not on the phone yet. Amongst us, Ted Suzuki, Tatiana Kramtsova, and Siva Subramian Mutsami.
Thank you. Yes, those three are. Are you able to get onto the call, or are you only going to be on Adobe Connect? Perhaps somebody needs a call out to who's on Adobe Connect. If so, please let me know, and I will ask the operator to call you. Thank you, Alan. And please, may I remind you to say your names before you speak, because it enhances the transcription, the value of the transcription.
Thank you, Glenn. I've just put a note on Adobe Connect telling people to ask for a call out if they need it. The first item on our agenda today is finalization of the public comment announcement. Has everyone had a chance to look at what Marika sent out? Are there any specific comments?
Alan, this is Mike Pelage, if I could get in the queue.
Yes, please, and I'm in the queue also after you. Anyone else? Okay, Mike.
Thanks. Marika, the one thing that I found valuable from the presentation that was given in Sydney was the presentation by Rob that showed how some of the who is data changes at the time of expiration. And I was just wondering, since who is a big issue, would the public comment perhaps want to articulate that particular aspect, bringing attention to the community of this practice by some registrars of changing who is data at expiration, as that might impede the ability of the original registrant to potentially recover their name? And again, I refer back to some of the work that Rob Hall had done in his presentation in Sydney. So that was just perhaps a suggestion for another question point in the initial questionnaire, if the group thought that was appropriate.
Mike, can I just ask for a clarification, this is Marika, because what would you like to know? Is it just to inform people of that practice, or is there a specific question you would like to get input from in the public comment period?
What I would like to do is, that since it's not clear right now whether we will or will not have a registrar survey, I really do think we need to drill down a little on what the practices of registrars are when they change who is data, since the accuracy of who is data is such an important topic in a number of different ICANN compliance issues. You know, when registrars begin to unilaterally change who is data at expiration, I think that is an issue that I think some in the intellectual property community would want to particularly look at or focus in their analysis. Now, again, we just had, I forget the woman's name from Into the Joined, and, you know, historically, to date, we've not really had anyone from the IPC participating, But I do think that is a point that the IPC might want to look at a little further. So, again, perhaps it's just a point of it's out there, this is an issue. Those constituencies where who is a concern may want to look at this a little further.
Yeah. Michael, for clarity, you're referring to this as the as registrars change who is. I think, in fact, what you're describing is the practice of transferring the domain to ownership of someone other than the RAE, and as a result, who is changes. Is that correct, or are you referring to something else?
I believe, and I, as I said, right now I'm in the car, so I don't have access to the PowerPoint presentation that Rob did, but I believe that at expiration, and again, this is why what different registrars do at different phases post-expiration is one of the things I think we need to look into and how they are changing that who is data. And so, again, I don't have the examples that Rob gave in Sydney. When I get back in front of a computer in the next hour or so, I can try to send that to the list to articulate that point.
Okay, but I'm pretty sure that what we're talking about is the contractual terms which allow the registrar to change the ownership as soon as it expires or at a later time if they choose, and therefore who is changes as a result, as opposed to what you were describing sounds like it is they're putting incorrect information in who is. Which I believe is not the case.
And see, this is the issue here. When you hear some of the arguments that registrars have articulated in how they can perhaps take control of a domain name after expiration, is they will point to the .com, .net, and .org registries where their registrar account is debited at the time of renewal for $6. But as I articulated in one of my first emails to the list, .biz, .tel, .travel, and some of the other registries, in fact, do not debit. So they have not been debited anything. So the benefit of that renewal, you know, the question is, does it go to the original registrar, or is the registrar somehow inserting itself into some special privilege where it feels it has the ability to change the who is?
Well, but what you're...
Can I get in the queue, Ellen? This is Tim.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were on the call. I'm glad you are.
And this is Jeff Eck outside. Gus will be at the queue, please.
Okay, hold on a second, then.
So we'll let the registrar speak, and then I'll get to the back.
Okay, I really would like not to have a substantive discussion right now on whether what registrars are doing is reasonable and should we allow these practices to continue or try to put some procedure or something in place to stop it. That's the substantive part of the discussion which we may need to have, but I don't think that's the discussion we need to debate right now.
If you do feel that there's a future debate, should that perhaps be included in the questionnaire so those people for who accuracy of who is information is important in other areas will be aware of this practice?
If we do, it should be included in a way where the question does not lead to a biased question, does not lead to an answer that someone may be looking for. In terms of specifics, my comment was in the middle of the document, right at the last sentence of input requested, we're asking, does anyone have supporting data related to the questions above? I would like to make it a lot more specific and ask the question closer to what we've been discussing in this group of can people cite specific situations that, you know, that they are personally aware of where things happen that they believe we should be remedying with this PDP. And that wording is obviously not very refined. But I think we're looking for more information in this public comment on quantifying and qualifying the types of problems that happen in the marketplace. And I think we need to ask the question a lot more directly than what is there at the moment. Okay, next is Tim.
Yeah, that was sort of what I was going to comment on too, Alan, is that just, well, what is the purpose of this particular public posting that we're going to do, or this? I guess I'm understood it to be more of a reiteration of the same issues that were raised in the charter and asking for public comment and then, you know, an attempt to try to quantify what the issues are. So I would be a little skeptical about or a little cautious about including too much information that's actually a substantive debate of the issues. And so if we're going to include anything like Michael is talking about, then I would have the same caution that it's got to be done in a way that isn't going to prejudice the comments. You know, it can't be a leading type question. But my preference would be that at this point we stick with what America come up with, but I don't have a problem with trying to be a little more specific in asking for information to help us quantify what the problems are, because I mean that's really one of the things we're trying to get.
That's
to.
One of the reasons we're asking for public comments. So I think
we need
to be more direct about it.
But I would be cautious about getting into substantive issues that we might be debating later on. I think those are more for like the initial, report or the interim report, whatever we call it, that will also be posted for public comment, and there'll be plenty of opportunity for comment on that at that point.
I mean, the other thing, obviously, is we'd like to get this out in the next week or two.
Exactly, right.
If we start going into too much depth, we're never going to come to closure on wording on this. Jeff?
Yeah, I wanted to agree with him on that, and especially specifically on the prejudicial part, because in Rob's presentation, I do have it in front of me, and it was an example of one registrar, and it was Network Solutions, and it's something that they did. Or I don't know if they still do, but I'd rather not use terms like registrars are doing this, because the example was of one that did it, and it sort of paints a brush saying all the registrars are doing it, and it seems a little prejudicial. So that's why I agree that we should leave that out, and it would be for further investigation as part of the current charter and what's up for public comment.
Yeah, my preference certainly is to ask for essentially descriptions of problems that are happening, and we can analyze after the fact what the syndromes are and try to characterize them. But I wouldn't want to lead with, you know, people are doing these naughty things, have you seen it? That's just not the way to get unbiased answers, in my opinion, anyway. Anyone else in the queue?
Michaela has his hand up in Adobe Connect.
Sorry, I wasn't watching.
I was trying to be subtle. The only comment I would make is, if for this kind of public comment thing to be of any real use, I would suggest that some kind of link to definitions of the terms used in it is provided, because those of us actively involved in this on a day-to-day basis may understand the difference between RGPs and grace periods and all that kind of thing. But if you want to get more inclusive responses, some kind of link to a simple glossary of what these terms are referring to would be helpful.
Are you volunteering?
Volunteering what? Sorry. There is a glossary already on the ICANN website, I think.
Madam, this is Marika. Can I?
Yes, go ahead.
I mean, some of the information, of course, is contained in the issues report and explained in detail what the different terms mean and what they do in practice. So that's why, as well, the background documents and links are included. I can have a look to see if these terms are explained as well in the ICANN glossary and include a link in that way, if that might help.
Assuming those definitions are, in fact, things that others can understand.
Well, it's just because the general problem with a lot of the public comment periods is that the document that you end up looking at on the ICANN website is so loaded with really oblique terminology that it's very hard for a normal human being to understand exactly what the question is, even if people who drafted the document understand it.
I don't think anyone's disagreeing with you.
Okay.
Is there anyone else? I have one comment that I think is non-substantive, but let's continue on the speaker list if there's anyone else who wants to speak. No. Okay. The what I think is non-substantive is to revert interchange the order of background input requested. That is, start off with what we're asking them for and then go into specifics. I think if you don't catch people's attention quickly on what you're asking, their minds wander off before you get to that point. Anyone have any objection to inverting those two sections?
That makes sense to me, anyway.
Fair enough, Alan.
Can I maybe propose that I send out a revised version, making the change reverting input requests in the background section and adding the specificity that was discussed regarding to the data requested, post that to the list tomorrow, give people one more day to review it, and then we can open the public comment period. Would that be acceptable?
It's acceptable to me. Anyone object? Okay. We've made a decision. I could find the agenda. Didn't know what's next.
It's on the Adobe Connect as well, if you have that in front of you.
All right. The constituency input template. Essentially, if I can summarize it, we are saying we want input and the template is the items on the charter.
And if I can maybe add to that?
Yes, you may, certainly.
Because what we discussed last
week... I'm a little bit curt.
What we discussed last week was that I would put together the template, which you can see on the right-hand side in Adobe, and it was circulated last week, with the basic questions, and then for everyone to provide more specific questions or sub-questions to the charter questions to be included. I have a slight suspicion that not many people had a chance to review it or think about it, because I don't think there has been any suggestions have been made on the mailing list. So maybe people need some more time or want to throw out some suggestions now, or feel that asking these questions is sufficient to get constituencies to provide input.
It's Jeff. Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Okay. This is on the constituency input template. Are we looking, so just to clarify, because maybe I'm a little confused, we're looking for individual members of each constituency to submit to these, or are you looking for one constituency answer, not an agreement, but how do you expect the responses to come in and from who? Just if you can clarify that, please.
According to the way we normally do things, this is a response from the constituency as such. Now, they may choose to have minority opinions or individual things within it, or may try to give a single view that is the belief of the constituency. That's up to them. But this is soliciting input from the constituency formally.
And to add to that, this is Marika again. On previous working groups, we've provided templates to constituencies that they might find useful to go through the different questions, but there's no requirement for the constituency to fill in this template. They might choose to, you know, just have one statement or add other information. This is more a tool to provide some guidance on, you know, what questions the group is looking feedback on.
Okay, thanks.
Now, to some extent, we are limited by the scope, by the charter, to address the questions that were in the charter, going back to the issues report. To what extent do we want to explicitly ask, are there any other issues that the constituency believes must be addressed while we're doing this? Or is this the opportunity to solicit, essentially the question, have we missed anything? We being the collective that's gotten to this point.
Yeah, this is Tim. The only caution I have about that, I mean, I don't have a problem with it, I guess, just that we're careful not to, we don't let that lead us into scope creep or we get too far off.
On the other hand, if there's a belief that we've missed something, then it's appropriate for us to go back and get the charter modified if it, indeed it's something we missed and not just ignore it altogether. I don't think we can unilaterally change scope.
Right.
just something good to do or not worth asking?
I think we'll get it either way.
That's it. We don't need to ask.
But experience is a test experience as a new teacher.
I mean, I'll give a small example. The last point in the charter says, should one be able to change the registrar during the RGP, which is something that is not allowed under the current implementation of the RGP. At the time I wrote the original documents, and perhaps at the time that Marika and her colleagues did the issues report, I foolishly believed that the statements from ICANN saying you're allowed to change your registrar during the after the expiration date was true. Apparently, de facto now, because of the typical change of the name of the registrant, because of the contractual terms, you de facto cannot change the registrar when you're trying to renew after the expiration date. So if I had the wisdom today, or then, which I had today, that last item would have dropped off during the RGP and just said, should you have the right to change the registrar?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an example of the type of thing I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm happy to just leave it be as it is, and as you say, chances are if someone feels something strongly, they'll say it. If they don't, they don't.
Yeah, that's my feeling. I mean,
I'm willing to go along with that.
Yeah.
So as it is, you would like to have it sent out to the constituencies. Then another question is, what will be a reasonable deadline?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe to ask to some of the people here that are part of different constituencies, what time is normally needed to complete a request like this?
Alan, it's Mason.
Yeah. Before that, is there a norm for these things? My recollection says there is a norm, but I don't recall what it is, whether it's 21 or 30 days.
I think normally it's driven by the deadline for the issues report, but as we're being a bit more flexible with the different deadlines because they're not really realistic, we might allow more time here as well.
Okay, if just to put it in the time frame, if we allow 30 days, we're talking about the end of September, which means we have the input in well before the Seoul meeting. My preference would be to see it a little bit earlier than that, but let's go to the list, Mason.
Yeah, I think 30 days is fine. I think with registrars, I would ask for that amount of time for two reasons. One is, in the U.S. anyway, there's a great deal of folks who are on vacationing or taking time off around this time of year. So it may be hard. It may take a little bit longer to collect the data. Second reason is we have such a number of people who tend to want to contribute to a discussion like this that it takes time for everything to get synthesized. So from our point of view, a little bit extra time would be helpful.
Other comments?
This is Mike Palage. I'd support Mason. Let's just go with 30 days. We're still well in advance of Seoul. Let's get the data and let's get the feedback from the constituencies to do our job right.
Okay. Michele, do you still have your hand up from the last time, or is this a new one?
Sorry, that's me from the last time. I'll take it down. Sorry.
This is Marika. Just for the record, the bylaws state that constituency statements should be submitted within 35 calendar days after initiation of the PDP, so we're already well beyond that deadline.
Okay. Then, since we're already well beyond it and there's been two statements in favor of 30 days, let's do 30 days and let's get it issued as soon as we can. Everyone in agreement?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Now we're on to the subject that some people have said we should deep six of the continued discussion of the registrar survey. I'd like to propose two things. number one, that we not treat this as a survey, but in my mind, a survey is something we send out to everyone and expect people to voluntarily respond to it. I would suggest that we change the method of doing this. Instead of making it a survey, make it a collection of data from a selected number of registrars and I would like to see resellers, and make it a staff responsibility with help from whoever else feels they can contribute. And I know Michael has already said he's been collecting some of this data from registrar websites to start with. I think staff is in a position to outreach and get information which might not be on their website, might be not private, but not necessarily on their website. And I would also suggest, to the extent possible, that this data be identified with who the registrar is, but if necessary, that some data could be redacted to not make it identifying information if the registrars feel that that would be something that they would force them not to participate. Any thoughts on this?
Mike Pelage, is a compromise I could go along with that?
Mason, I've got a couple of questions.
Sure.
So Alan, I'm sorry, what are you envisioning? So someone from staff would be responsible for calling or getting in touch with a selected number of registrars to ask the full list of questions as proposed by Mike, or
No. I think the next part of what I was going to say is we then have to refine what it is we're asking for.
Uh-huh.
So I wasn't proposing the full list as specified by Mike.
Okay, well, let's not. Yeah,
as a general process, instead of sending something out and hoping someone sends it back, and by the very nature, whoever sends it back is a self-selecting group that may not give us a good cross-section.
Right. Yeah, okay, well, I agree with you. Let me not get ahead of the game by talking about what's on the list right now.
Okay. Although I would like to see names beside the answers, there are certain things, such as prices and stuff like that, which, although it may be, I'm not debating at this point, but it may be reasonable to collect the data, but not to identify it with particular registrars. And I have no problem if some of the data is so redacted like that, and we just get statistical results.
So I guess I would have a question for Marika in that does staff have capacity at this point to take this on? And a question even before that one, which is what would be statistically significant in terms of total number of accredited registrars to have any level of data that would be considered valid?
This is Marika. I cannot answer the question of what is statistically valid, but from staff capacity, I guess it depends on the number of questions and, indeed, the number of registrars we'll be targeting. I think we definitely can help in facilitating, and, if there's some individuals willing, like Mike, to help out, I think we should be able to do it as long as we're not surveying all the registrars, of course, and not the whole list of questions. So,
I'll tell you my motivation for doing it, and if the group were to agree with that, it removes some of the need to be statistically significant. And that is, I'm interested in understanding not an anecdotal version of what happens, as Rob Hall gave us, but essentially some range of processes and outcomes. And I mean, I know talking to a half a dozen registrars that the process that each follows from the minute that a domain expires through the next 30, 45 days ranges all over the map in terms of how they treat the entry in DNS, how they treat who is, how they treat what options they provide to the RAE. And I think we need to understand what the range of experiences that the registrant sees before we can try to say how the policy should be changed or how practices should be changed. So I'm not necessarily looking for statistical significance, but more an understanding of what the range of options are.
Okay, and then I don't mean to bypass you here, Alan, but I just need to ask Marika, if I may. What, Marika, would this would be done by the policy staff or by someone elsewhere on staff?
We need to check internally. I think some of the information would probably be policy staff information that's easy, available on the website. That's a task I think I could conduct, but if there are more specific questions, it might make more sense, for example, for the registrar liaison who has the contacts with the right people to ask some of those questions.
Okay.
But again, they're more flexible, and it depends as well on availability and capacity, of course.
All right.
Mason, I'm curious why that matters from our perspective, and why it matters from staff perspective.
Well, for a couple of reasons. I mean, you know, one is I think if that compromise method were to go forward, I think it matters who does the asking, because it affects what level of compliance, or not compliance, what level of cooperation or disclosure you get from registrars.
I would suggest if you think one method is better than the other for getting cooperation.
I think if this were to go forward, I think that if this were to go forward, you would do better with Marika's staff than you would pretty well, or the liaison than you would anywhere else. I guess one last question. How much calendar time do you anticipate this would need to take to get something that would be usable?
Again, it really depends on how many registrars we're targeting and how many questions we're asking. It's very difficult for me to estimate it at this point. You know, if it's two questions to 10 registrars, well, it could be a couple of days, a week. But if we're asking 50 questions to 50 registrars, of course, it takes a whole lot of more time.
Right.
So I think
okay.
It's for this group as well to think about how quickly they would like that information, as to how broad they want to go with the questions and how many registrars or resellers they would like to target.
Yeah.
Marika, you just beat me to my statement of, since we want the data yesterday, that I think is going to constrain us in targeting how many registrars and what we're asking. I see some hands up. James?
Yes, thanks, Alan. This is James. Just a question, and perhaps I'm just not getting something here, but if our goal is to collect and synthesize data to put some boundaries around this issue, what is the value in naming the registrar responses, and why that couldn't be sterilized into registrar A, B, C, et cetera? I'm just trying to think of how it informs this group to have those names identified.
Well, I can give my answer. For things that are non-controversial, that is, they're on the website anyway, they're effectively public knowledge, knowing who it is simply allows me to go back and say, GoDaddy does such and such, but I'm a little bit confused. Can you please elaborate? And I don't think it gives us any more or less than that. That's my thought. I don't know what other people feel about that. Anyone want to specifically address that before we go on to Tatiana?
This is James one more time. Sorry, I was a little slow on the mute button there. But the only concern I would have with that, Alan, and I would just put out that if we were to make any comparisons based upon that data, hold up any particular responses as exemplary, or hold up any others as negative, and then essentially insert judgment into that data. That's really all I'm getting at with this point.
Mason here.
How do the other registrars feel about this?
Yeah, Mason here.
Yeah.
James actually, I think, makes a pretty valid point. You may get better cooperation with registrars if there's an assurance that their answers would be anonymized, and we're, as you can tell, we're a little bit of a suspicious group to begin with, and if there's the opportunity to give data in a way that as James suggests, removes the suspicion or fear that later on judgments can be made either inside the community or outside in the marketplace itself, then I think you'll get better cooperation.
Then I'll ask the question in the reverse way. Is there anyone who could make a case for why we should keep names on it, given what Mason and James have just said.
This is Marika. My only question would then be, do we then just have a list of the registrars that we've surveyed and basically attach that list to the anonymized data, so at least there is an overview of which registrars have provided data? Or
I think we would have to do that, otherwise we have no ability to really judge how representative it is and how much of a cross-section it is. Is that reasonable to Mason and James?
Mason here. It's up to you how I think it really is up to you how you want to present it. I would just say that I think the more anonymized, the better the data.
Agreed. This is James. I agree with it.
Let's withhold judgment on that for the moment, then.
There are a number of people in the queue on Adobe, Alan.
Yeah. No, I was just trying to address that one.
Okay.
Okay, back to the queue, Tatiana.
Yes. So I've done help for working group with getting answers for this question from native agreements of different registrars, because I know that English version, terms of English version and, for example, Russian version are the same main terms, but there are some differences for foreign people and for native people. So I can check, and maybe this list for some registrars we can change a little. Because I don't think that all of them will answer for all of questions.
No, I don't think so. I think we need to respect the questions significantly in any case. But, yes, thank you. Shiva? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Now we could hear you now, yes.
Yeah. And if the survey is to be limited to a few select registrars, how are these registrars to be selected? Usually in an exercise like this, if we have to approach a select number of registrars, we'll tend to approach the ones who are very responsive. And the ones who are responsive are usually the people with good practices. So how are these registrars to be chosen for the response? That is my first point. And the other point is that some of the questions in the questionnaire are such that a registrar would be very reluctant to part with information. Do you expect any registrar to disclose candid responses to all these questions?
Well, we've already said that we have not determined what the list of questions is. So I think part of it is up to us to make sure we ask reasonable questions. How to select the registrars is something that we have to discuss next. Margie?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that if we're concerned about statistical significance, if the answers are anonymous, at the staff level, we could at least indicate how many registrations are reflected in the answer. In other words, on a collective basis, if that would be useful, in analyzing the results.
I think it would be useful, and I think that addresses part of Shiva's question of how do we select them, and I think we're going to select them to try to get a good cross-representation of registrant experience. So
right,
large registrars and diverse types of registrars, I think, are probably what we will look for.
That's right, and you would tell us what kind of registrars you'd like us to look at, and
yeah.
We can report back, if there was geographic diversity and, large versus small, that sort of information on an aggregate basis.
Michele.
Sorry, I was just unmuting myself. Not just to reiterate what the other registrars were saying, the more anonymous the data, the more likely you are to get better results, and you're more likely to get people cooperating, to be perfectly honest.
Understood. I think we can make a final decision once we've gone back and looked at the specific questions. I have a question for the group. Now, from my perspective, an awful lot of the problems which caused the initiation of the request for issues report in the PDP relate to resellers. To what extent do we want to try to capture the registrant experience and the terms that are seen at resellers in this survey? From my perspective, if we don't, I think we're avoiding most of the problem that caused us to be here in the first place. Is that a reasonable position to take?
It's Mason Allen with a question.
Go ahead.
Can I go? Yeah, okay. So I think that's fine. The only question I have is how would you go about getting hold of them and asking them the question?
Good question.
I think the answer to that, in my mind, again, whether how practical it is a combination of asking registrars that have very heavy reseller models to ask them for perhaps a cross-section, and just web searches. It's not hard to come up with a bunch of resellers, and, you know, they may or may not be statistically valid, but there are high and low profile ones that you can pick.
I'd have to defer. I'm sorry, Mason speaking again. I'd have to defer to the other registrars on the call on that one, because the registrar I'm representing does not operate on a reseller model, so maybe the others could.
Then you're clean. Comments from others? Margie, did you have your hand back up again?
This is Tim Allen. When you get
one. No, Dan.
Okay, James and then Tim.
I'm sorry, I lost the Adobe window where the queue was indicated. So the question is that whether registrars that have a network of resellers established, whether they would want these questions to go through the parent registrar or through ICANN directly, or is not at all an option, apparently not.
Well,
if
from my perspective, if we say let's ignore the whole concept of resellers, then we're choosing to statistically eliminate the largest part of the perceived problem. So I don't think that's a wise way for ICANN and this work
and I
group
think,
to proceed. But I'm just
and
the
this
chair.
Is
I'm
James. I just think that you know, and I'm not advocating that we ignore or exclude any instances or statistically significant data that can be achieved through resellers. I just, and I think I posted this earlier on the list, feel I'm still just having a little bit of confusion over why we would need to make the distinction between a reseller and its parent registrar when, as I think Tim and some others have responded, that you know, from a compliance perspective, from ICANN, is there's no distinction between the actions of a reseller and its parent registrar.
There's no legal distinction, but in practice there are distinctions. For instance, right now ICANN does not even know who any resellers are, other than anecdotally by accident. So clearly ICANN does no compliance. Different registrars we know have different models. Some registrars say, I am really the registrar. Someone else may be doing the front office work, you know, to find the customers, but they still deal with me for a lot of the things. The expiration processes are handled by the registrar. Other registrars have models where the resellers are very independent, and the words that were used by someone the other day to me was that they want the reseller wants to be viewed as a separate organization, and the name of the registrar isn't ever mentioned, and they handle all the parts of customer relationships. So the models are quite different, and in some cases the registrar may be able to speak on behalf of all their resellers. In other cases, they can't. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, those models are good or bad, but I think those exist in the marketplace.
Okay, understood. And I guess my only point, and then I'll let it go for now is that if we were to see a skewing of the statistical data, or if we were to quantify the that there is an issue, particularly with resellers versus registrars, I think acting upon that or exploring different policy options around that start to fall apart unless you're actually talking about the parent registrar. But I just want to make sure it's not a we're not chasing a wild goose here.
Yeah, Alan, this is Tim. Can I?
Yeah, please, Tim.
I think James is making the main point here, and that's put a little bit differently, and that's that, one, I think it's going to be very difficult for staff or anybody else to try to quantify what resellers are doing, just given the current situation. With GoDaddy, like 99.9% of our resellers, anything that happens with expirations goes through our system, so you deal with that. The other 0.1% don't do anything with it. But we understand that that's not true necessarily with all reseller models. So I think it's going to be very difficult to try to go to those resellers or try to get any kind of empirical data from resellers. I think the thing to keep in mind is that as we discuss, you know, policy, possible policies or best practices or whatever, I think just keeping in mind that there's that reseller network out there, we just need to keep that in mind as we discuss or, you know, try to formulate any recommendations about what we might want to see done. And so I don't know what other information we would need that would really help. I think all you're going to find, even if we did get data from resellers, is pretty much a mirror of what registrars are doing. So if we did a good cross-section of registrars and what their practices are, I think that's going to be pretty reflective of what's going on in the industry as a whole. And then as we discuss policy, best practices, whatever, just keep the reseller model in mind as we develop those.
I guess I'm not willing to take that as gospel. At the very start of our process, you know, it's clear in my mind that all we can end up doing is setting rules for registrars who may have to pass it on to resellers, you know, pass on their obligations and such.
Take what is gospel. I mean, gospel or not, the plain fact of the matter is getting data that's usable from resellers is going to be difficult. It's just a fact.
Yeah, some of it may well come from websites. That's not all that difficult. Getting them to cooperate.
You're going to ask registrars to identify their resellers, and which is an issue in itself, because to do that they'd have to go and get the resellers' permission, you know, blah blah blah. Unless, you know, there's a way for us to go out and identify them ourselves, or for staff to do that.
Well, I guess I don't want to make this a debate between the two of us, but I guess if staff comes back and say they just couldn't do it, that's different than not asking. Any other comments?
Mike Palage. I think, Alan, you raise a good point. Let's ask staff to do it. If they can't do it, then we determine what to do. So as I said, if in fact staff runs into the problems that Tim has articulated, we address it at that time.
Do you mind if I jump in here?
Please go ahead. Sorry, I'm losing track of whose hand is up from before and whose is new. Go ahead.
Okay. The only way it would be a conflict and would be problematic for registrars to go to resellers, get reseller permission, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, but there are plenty of public sources of information where you can easily see, you know, which companies hold large quantities of domain names, and then you can simply cross-reference that against those that are either registrars or subsidiaries of registrars. So, I mean, just looking at webhosting.info, for example, if I was to look at the list for Ireland, there's probably 30 companies listed on webhosting.info there's only one ICANN accredited registrar in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, though laughably, most of the registrations held by the registrar, which would be us, aren't actually on our own accreditation, since we've only started using our own accreditation in the last few days. But that's neither here nor there. But the point being that if you look at a country which has, say, let's say hypothetically, 5 ICANN accredited registrars, and there are 25 or 30 companies listed on a site such as webhosting.info, which I'm not saying is, you know, the be-all and end-all of statistics, but it should give you some kind of barometer. If you can cross-reference the two with, you know, that list with the ICANN accredited registrar list, it shouldn't be rocket science to work out, well, okay, in country X, you know, the Y percent of the market appears to be with this particular company. That company isn't an ICANN accredited registrar, so they must be somebody's reseller. Doesn't really matter who, you can just talk to them. I mean, that's just my crazy idea, of course.
That's pretty well my view of how one would do this also. It almost doesn't matter who they're a reseller for.
Well, that's the entire thing. I mean, if you go to the reseller, if you go to the company that appears to be a reseller directly, then you're not asking the registrar to divulge information that they may not want to divulge for a number of reasons, plus you're not going to run into the complication of this backwards and forwards, asking permission and everything else. If you asked us, for example, for a list of our resellers, I'd tell you politely to get lost, because I can't give you that information. I'm legally precluded from doing it.
On the other hand, there are resellers who publicly on their website.
You know, that can probably be done, and if staff is going to go to the websites, you know, look up information, you know, then if it's out there, it's out there. I don't know what staff would think about cold calling people, or what those people would think about getting cold calls from ICANN. That might be another issue. But, you know, we're talking about this statistical, you know, how statistically valid some of this information is or whatever. Here's the thing. There's 900 registrars. Of course, you can group those into, what, maybe 200, 300 and some odd registrar families. You know, that's a manageable number to maybe get some kind of statistical sampling of across the cross-section. When you're talking about resellers, GoDaddy alone has 30,000 resellers all over the world, and we're not even the biggest. You take in resellers, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of resellers all over the world of all different types. So I'm not sure. Let me throw that out there, at least, so that when we do get this information, we can keep it in context. That if we've got information from 100 resellers, you're talking about, you know, a teeny tiny sampling of the resellers that are out there.
Indeed. On the other hand, if you have a few resellers that you know do large volumes, you might want to volunteer them just because that will give us a good data point that you have.
Who's
some confidence.
Who's going to know what volumes they do?
Pardon me?
Well, that's the key, you know, is even trying to determine the volume. I mean, you can tell how many sites somebody hosts that doesn't necessarily tell you what they're doing as far as domain registrations. But.
Yeah, this is Margie. I have similar concerns to that raised by Tim because of the volume of resellers that are out there. I'm not suggesting that that staff wouldn't engage in the process. I think we would need to get some very clear guidance from the group as to how we would go about identifying those resellers and what sorts of cooperation we may get from the registrars, because I can't imagine a situation where we would randomly call up resellers without some sort of introduction and expect very much response from them, given that they're not a contracted party with ICANN. So certainly, you know, we'll really need to explore it. You know, we'd like more guidance from the group on how you think would be appropriate to deal with resellers, but I think that's new territory for us. I'm not aware of other situations where we've done research with respect to resellers, and I'll certainly check that internally.
Yeah, on the other hand, you do get complaints, and those must identify resellers in many of the cases.
Yeah, that's true. We'll certainly take it back to the compliance department and see whether they have any suggestions on how, you know, and on how it would be possible to identify some resellers.
And this is Marika. Just to add to that, I think it would be indeed helpful if this group would come up with a list of registrars that they would like to see surveyed and indeed include any resellers that they think might be appropriate. And then we can review indeed how easy it is to find, because it will depend as well on the questions, because if some of the information is easily available and, for example, on websites, you know, then it doesn't matter that we don't have someone to call or to speak to on the reseller side. But of course, if it's very specific questions that might be perceived as intrusive, and especially from a party that they normally don't have a relationship with, then of course the situation is different. So a first step might be to identify who that sample of registrars and resellers might be or might look like, and that might give an idea as well of how much time it will take. As I heard Tim mentioning 200, which is quite a large number, and of course it will take quite some time to gather that kind of information.
I would not think we're looking at something that size. That's my opinion.
And this is Tim again, Alan. So that just you know, raises the issue about how useful or valid the data will be in our discussions, or how really unique it'll be from what we find from the registrar information, which I still will be totally amazed if what you find resellers doing is anything different than if we get a good cross-section of what registrars are doing. It's just based on what I know of the industry, which may not be comprehensive, I understand. And I think the key issue still is that no matter what we find out about what resellers are doing, bottom line is that whatever recommendations we come up with, if we want to make, we need to make sure that they can be applicable to resellers through the register, because we can't do policy on resellers. We can do best practices. We could come up with a best practice for resellers. I'm not sure what that would really mean. It would still have to be through the registrars. So whatever we do, whatever recommendation we come up with, it has to be, you just need to use that thinking that we want registrars to, you know, pass this through, be able to enforce this back on resellers as well. And we just understand that that's a key issue, and formulate our recommendations based on that. And so I think, you know, that we could expend a lot of time on this reseller research to get very little back for what we'd invest in. Just something to think about.
This is Rick. If I can just make a suggestion, would it be an idea just to start with a few and just see what kind of a few registrars, and if anyone has suggestions on a number of big resellers, and just start there, do a few and see what kind of data that gives, and then decide where to move from there, instead of immediately engaging in a very big research effort and maybe finding that we don't find the relevant information that we're expecting? Or
I would think as soon as we come up with a list of questions, that is how we should proceed. I support that. Michele, did you have your hand up again? Or still?
I can give you a little bit of help. I mean, the two biggest resellers on the planet are Google and Yahoo. So, and maybe you could throw Microsoft in there, perhaps, although I don't know if the volume's quite up to that. But those would be three big resellers. I think they're pretty well known, and the registrars that service them are pretty well known. But I think when you check it out, you're going to find they don't do, none of them do anything with expired names. The registrars deal with it all.
Yeah. And knowing that makes our problem simpler, if indeed that's what we find is the norm.
I don't agree, Alan. I don't think it's going to make it simpler. I think if this group comes up with recommendations, they have to consider the fact that they want resellers, wanted to apply to resellers as best as possible as well, regardless of what we find out. And I think that's going to be an issue we have to deal with one way or the other. You know, that's kind of the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, you've made the point that whatever rules are made for registrars, if their obligations are taken over by resellers, they have to follow the same rules. It's up to the registrar to ensure that. But the rules that a registrar is subject to don't get waived because they use a reseller.
Right, right.
Yeah. So any rules we make are not going to be different for resellers. We, you know, the RA currently has some words about resellers, and maybe it needs more words, you know, if we end up changing some practice or policy. But what I'm looking for now is not to try to set rules for the reseller, but to find out what the current state of the art is if a registrant deals with resellers, and to identify whether, in fact, it does look like it's different from dealing with a native registrar or not. And based on the numbers that you've given, we're clearly not going to get statistically valid information, but we will get a sampling. And that's the reason I brought it up to begin with.
So if I may, this is Mason, can I ask a question?
Sure.
What? If all we have is a sampling and it presumably couldn't be relied on in terms of being rigorous research, that just suggests to me that that's not enough basis to propose to change anything.
This is Pelage, if I could get in the queue.
Yeah, and Jeff is ahead of you, though.
No problem. I'll wait.
Jeff?
Oh, okay, great. So as, you know, I'm listening to this, and as a person who I know will be approached because as Enom, we're, you know, the reseller model is our main model, and we have well over 30,000 resellers. So, you know, the part I'm trying to understand about these questions for the resellers and trying to figure it out is what we're looking for, unless what I'm wrong here, is the different methods that what happens in the post-expiration. And I think, you know, with 900-plus registrars and a huge, in many different business models, do we really think that by not going to the registrars directly, that there's some different models that go through the resellers that are going to be completely different than what the registrars do, that we need to go out, that there's that much, you know, differential in the business models that we need to go to staff, have them do all this work, have people come to people like me, ask me to go to resellers and go through all these steps. Is there any real information we think we'll get above and beyond going to the registrars themselves that we need to take these extra steps?
I can give my opinion. In my mind, I think it is worth going through that exercise to find out if there's any difference or not.
So you think that beyond the whatever number the registrars, the 900 plus, or let's call it, you know, a couple of hundred, you know, entities, that the resellers will have different ones besides those? Is that what you're saying, that you think that there is, that the resellers have different ones beyond there, even though they're sort of, I can't really go into it. I know Tim tried to touch on this, that most of it goes through the actual registrar themselves in the expiration, so I personally, from someone who knows this, I don't think you'll have a much different business model on these resellers. And personally, I think it would be a waste of everyone's time to do this. I think the business models of the registrars themselves would give a good indication of what happens.
I think we differ.
What I'll risk saying here is that I think from GoDaddy's perspective, you know, there's a significant potential in the aftermarket for domain names. I think we all realize and recognize that. So, you know, we're very unlikely to allow resellers to capitalize on that without involving us. I mean, that's the bottom line. I don't see any of the registrar considering or taking that any differently. I would be highly amazed. And if that is the case, we're talking about a teeny tiny number. You got to remember, the top 10 registrars control like what, close to 80%, 75-80% of the domain registrations on the planet. I understand your concern, Alan.
I'll give you an example.
Spend a whole lot of time and effort and money on something that's going to have just like, you know, almost negligible value to us in the end, but.
I'll give you an example of, you know, I can't tell you the how prevalent it is, but there are web hosting resellers who formally state that they will keep the domain in their name for your convenience so they can make changes. And therefore, the original registrant never actually has his name show up in Whois. And then that's not a practice that I think any registrar would do other than through a privacy service. And yet resellers do it.
And how I guess I'm trying to struggle with how relevant that is to our issues about whether the name is recoverable or not. That's the issue of this group, right? Is
it turns out it's very relevant because people may never get notices, for instance, even if the even if the registrar sends out the expiring notices themselves.
And then we get into, you know, if somebody through their own choice goes to, you know, vendor A and enters into an agreement for this service or that service based on their rules, you know, or their the way they're going to proceed, how does that later? We just get into some pretty sticky situations that I think are going to be difficult.
From
a registrar's perspective, you know, that hosting company is the registrant, and their customer agreed to that. I think that's a known practice that happens. I don't think any of us would debate that. We know that. We don't need to do studies to know that. That's very common. It's been happening for ever since. You know.
The only reason I brought it up is not to remedy that particular thing, but to point out that some resellers have practices very different from what a registrar might, what most registrars do. Jeff, you had your hand up.
Oh, sorry. I wanted to take it. I'll just take it down there. But I think, you know, I can't. You know, I think maybe you might have to have some further discussion on this because I think Tim and I have a unique vantage point that we really have a good understanding of the business model. Maybe we can have this discussion with staff and walk them through it and some other people because it's tough to give some of the details, but it would really show why maybe this survey or the thing would be unwarranted or unnecessary. I don't know. That's a suggestion I'm throwing out there.
Okay. Cheryl, you had your hand up and then took it down. Are you? You're down now?
Mainly because it was covered in somebody else's statement, that's all.
Okay. Anyone else? There were some hands up that disappeared.
Pelage was still in the queue.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I don't see your hand. I forget it. I'm starting to use the technology. Mike.
That's okay. I think the one thing that I think we have to keep in the back of our mind as we undertake this working group's activities is creating openness, transparency, and predictability for the registrants. As I demonstrated in one of my original emails, there are different registries that have different practices right now, depending upon what the back-end infrastructure provider is. And a Neustar offers one thing for biz, tel, and travel. The affiliate's back-end infrastructure for org has a different thing. And what we need to look at is right now we have 20 GTLDs. What happens when we add another couple of hundred in the next 18 months? What are we doing to safeguard the registrant? Again, openness, transparency, and predictability. Those, I think, are the three key driving points that we need to be looking at. So if we only have one or two problems, and although some people may want to point and say, oh, it's only a couple, it's not significant, why are we undertaking this? I think we need to scale this and say, what is going to happen when we have a fundamental change in the namespace over the next 18 months where potentially with integration we're going to have registrars acting as registries, this, that, and the other thing. So I think we need to keep that long-term perspective of the problem we're trying to solve. Just offer that for consideration for everyone.
And just to respond to that just a little bit, this is Tim. On the other hand, you know, we can't go too far in trying to solve problems that don't yet exist. And the best we can really do is look at what is the current data that we have. And I think, you know, we try to start trying to solve problems that could possibly happen. You know, we could have all kinds of working groups started and all kinds of things that may or may not prove fruitful in the end or useful.
Bill?
Yeah, without taking an overall position on which questions should be asked or whether any of them should be publicly related to a particular registrar, I do think it would be useful as this goes forward to take the perspective of the registrar, particularly the one who may not be as sophisticated. And to note, and it won't be, if the only information revealed that's associated with a registrar is what's publicly available, there'll be no need to identify it as being publicly available. If other information is associated with a registrar from ICANN staff work or other surveying, I think it'd be useful to differentiate that, and whether it's from the website or from the contract, or when the, and whether the registrar has a chance to review the contracts prior to entering into it. I'm just, my point is, I think overall information about registrar practices and to the extent we can get it, reseller practices, is useful, but I think some aspect of this exercise should be what is the what can the registrant easily understand just from going to the registrars or other business, whoever they're using to their websites, what information is readily available so that they can understand what notice they'll be given prior to an expiration and what their opportunity is to renew post-expiration and at what cost. I think that's it's important to have that registrant perspective in the work product.
Yeah, I'll point out that the lack of that information, you know, if it's not publicly available, is also a message that we need.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
I mean, if you as a registrant cannot find out what happens, and, you know, I'll use GoDaddy as an example, what happens with GoDaddy after the second of expiration occurs, that's indicative also of a situation where the registrant cannot make an informed knowledge unless they're smart enough to know what is missing. And I don't want to imply that that's the case with GoDaddy. We have a long list of people with hands up, and we're starting to run out of time, so I'm going to ask you to be brief, but go on. Jeff?
Sure. This is just, I'll be quick here. Mike had mentioned a few times, and I saw in his questions, was the different registries and their different models of when they debit and the accounts. So, you know, there's no argument there. They do that, but I'm not sure how that affects anything, because there's really the ones that, you know, the majority are in the ComNet space, and that's VeriSign, and their system of how when they do when they debit on auto, you know, on the auto renew date. So what I'm just trying to figure out is why that this has come up in a discussion. It's not that there's actual registry choice that I can say.
Let's defer that till when we get to the actual questions.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I support what you're saying, by the way. Kaylee?
Sorry, just unmuting myself again. No, just two things. One, there's one major problem here, and that is what an actual registrant is, because as both Jeff and Tim have said, you know, the problem from the registrar perspective is that the hosting provider or web developer or web designer, whoever, may be seen to be contractually the registrant, whereas the person who's actually paying for the domain would see themselves as being the registrant.
Well, from a registrar's perspective, though, the hosting company paid for the domain name. You know, let me give you another example. I'm sure we still have them, but I'm not as close to all of our individual customers as I were back, like, in 2001. But I personally knew, like, almost every one of our customers when I first started with GoDaddy. One of our biggest customers, excuse me, he didn't offer an hosting service. He was a customer. He had several thousand names in his account. So it was interesting to discover that so from our perspective, he was our customer. He didn't have a reseller program at that time. We didn't even offer one. But he just set up a customer account, and he would come in and occasionally register domain names. Well, what he was doing was, on his business, was basically licensing those names back to various businesses who wanted to use them, and they paid him a licensing fee. But he maintained the domain names, maintained ownership, blah, blah, blah. You know, now when you're talking about registrars, you have millions of customers, and how do we discern that or try to make some sort of call on that? You know, that's not even an actual reseller relationship, so those things exist as well. Or the agent company or the law firm that registers domain names, in their law firm's name or whatever, in order to protect the confidentiality of their client. So there's all kinds of things there that
that. I think when you get into trying to determine, when you say this, you know, who's the actual registrant, it's irrelevant. The actual registrant is the person who's the customer at the registrar and who's come in and paid for the domain name.
Tim, I think that goes back to my original point of we're going to have to be very clear on definitions of some commonly used words. And, you know, do we need to differentiate between someone who is doing this kind of business essentially surreptitiously without being upfront and someone who's operating a privacy service where that's the reason for them existing? And I think we need to discuss this in substance. I don't think this is the right place for it, but you're
right, and
you're mentioning an important issue that we're going
to
have to
expand out into getting bogged down into business models outside of the registrar's business, because they're all over the map, and trying to figure out how we're going to regulate that is just, you know, I think going to be very problematic. And focusing on, you know, post-expiry domain name recovery, which is focused at the registrar. Anyway.
I've lost track of... Michele, your hand is up again?
I haven't taken it down.
Okay, sorry. I gave the microphone to you, but you didn't get it. Okay, go.
I think Tim has a very valid point. I mean, there's no... From the ICANN perspective, the registrar has a relationship with their registrant. Whether the registrar's registrant is doing something else with the domain afterwards is impossible for the registrar to know or for the registrar to control. But the flip side to it is that the user of the domain may see themselves as being the owner of the domain because they're paying somebody for the use of that domain, and they won't understand the difference.
Yep.
Right, and I don't disagree, Michele. I'm just saying that there's limits on what we're going to be able to do.
Oh, no, I don't get me wrong.
Right, yeah.
No, I don't get me wrong. The problem, I think, is that it comes back to the complaints that ICANN receives and the complaints other consumer groups may receive with regards to the entire post-expiry thing. I mean, just going back to the simplest thing is about the notifications. So I don't think there is an easy solution to it, and I wouldn't propose that there is. It's just, I think I can understand both sides of this, and it's just I don't see how anybody's going to be able to navigate through without ending up terribly entangled.
There are potentially easy answers, but probably not implementable ones. If I was the ruler of the universe, I would say that if a domain is registered, the contract with the original person wanting that domain name, if the name will not be registered in their name, then the agreement that person signs or agrees to must make it crystal clear that that's going to happen. Now, how you actually enforce that, how you word that, I'm not quite sure. It comes back to what Mike was saying in terms of openness and transparency, that an innocent registrant should have a chance to understand what's going on, and it shouldn't just depend on them having 6 years of experience and the insight to ask the right questions. You know, again, I don't know how we implement that. All right, we're running out of time very quickly. I think there's general agreement that we go ahead and try to collect some information. What process are we going to use to try to refine the list of questions so that it's a reasonable list and short enough that it's implementable? I think trying to do it en masse in this group is not going to be practical, and I think we're going to need some small breakout group to do that. Comments? Anyone still alive?
Well, you're at the volunteer point, so everybody can feel quiet, right?
Anyone who speaks may have their name taken down and held against them in the member subgroup.
I'm willing to work on it. My problem is from this coming Sunday through the next one, I'm unavailable. So either we defer till after that or start between now and Sunday. And if anyone else wants to work with me, I don't think Mike Pelage cannot say he wants to.
Well, I guarantee if I volunteer, there will be
a strong
outcome for some of my other colleagues.
I think we need someone on the registrar side to also work on this.
Alan, this is James. I will either step up or jump on that hand grenade, however you want to view it.
All right. Well done, James. Can we exchange email in the next 12 hours and try to find a time that's agreeable to us, and we'll have a small conference call one way or another.
Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, for registrar participation, there is an event this week, so it is going to be problematic to get something done before Sunday. Just putting that out there as well.
If we can try otherwise, we'll defer till I come back, I guess.
Alan, would you like us to set up a little doodle? See if we can find a time?
Yes. Thank you.
James, when do you head up to Toronto?
Tomorrow morning.
Are you available tomorrow, or because the events are Thursday, Friday, or are you already tied up in meetings on Thursday? I mean on Wednesday.
In fact, beginning Wednesday afternoon. So possibly some time on Friday or Saturday.
All right, Marika, let's try. I'm not optimistic we'll manage, but let's try to find an hour and a half to do that when people can, including some staff member, you if possible. But
yeah.
But if
shall I otherwise as well include already some dates for not next week, but the week after?
That would be fine with me.
Okay.
If the gods of airlines are with me, I'm back Sunday night. But with plenty of opportunities to misconnect along the way. Next meetings. I would suggest our next meeting.
You've missed item 5 on your agenda, Alan. Nor are you going to have time to address it.
That's the statement that Garth sent us?
Correct.
I don't think he's on this call.
That's also correct.
And I don't think we have time since we're
as long as you
six
know
minutes
you
before the end
of
six minutes before the end and the start of another call.
Yes, I'm well aware.
So I would defer that one until my personal opinion is much of what is in that document is not really related to post-expiration issues, although peripherally it is. And
Alan,
it's
Jeff. Can I make
a
quick comment? This is directed at me. Because there were some points on this, and I'm not going to, because Garth isn't on the call, and I think I sent an email. I don't know if it went through, but about the relevancy of the report and the accuracy, I'm not even going to go into that part. But just, I think Alan, I agree with you on the point you just made, is that this group is a post-expiration domain name recovery, and
exactly,
and that he discussed is a brokerage company and doesn't offer any registration services. So I don't think shouldn't be discussed in this group, has no relevance to it, and I'll just keep it short and sweet on that.
Yeah, since we're now talking about it instead of not talking about it, my feeling is it's an interesting example, without trying to go into exactly how accurate the details are, of the kind of situation a registrant faces in dealing with this marketplace.
But beyond that, that's about the only observation I think this group should be making on it.
That's right. So it's an example of how confusing the world could be, and part of our job may be to try to make that world simpler. But we're not going to fix. We're not going to fix all the ills of the world.
That comes back to education of the registrant and the end user, which is not the ballywick of this group.
Okay. Next meetings, I would suggest that we not meet next week. This group can, but I can't join you. And I would suggest we not schedule a call for next week. Schedule for 2 weeks from now.
Yep.
And attempt to schedule a meeting weekly. We seem to be particularly unable to work other than the 6 hours after the meeting and the 6 hours before a meeting. And given that, I would suggest that we try to meet weekly.
Hey, at least they work then, Alan. Don't knock it.
That's better than some meetings. Does that sound reasonable to people?
That's 12 hours ahead of Fast Flux, I think.
The next one would be the 1st of September. Is that correct?
Yes.
And I'll tell you in advance, I won't be able to make the one on the 8th of September.
Doesn't sound like a reasonable plan in general, however.
Yeah, Alan, I won't make the 8th of September either. That's
I'll be on an anniversary vacation. So.
Oh, congratulations.
That's something I can... I
would suggest we do what has been done with a number of other working groups, that is schedule them weekly, and each one we have the opportunity for canceling the next one. You know, if we have other work products or we know enough people won't attend, but that we put them on,
Alan,
on our calendar.
The only issue on the first for me, Cheryl here, is that I will actually have to be on mute for the most of the call, and I won't be in the Connect room because I'll be traveling to a conference that starts that day, so I'll be in traffic.
I think we're going to have that kind of situation on an ongoing basis for many of us.
Yep.
But does that sound like a reasonable plan, though, at this point to schedule starting the first weekly and cancel as necessary?
That's fine.
Okay.
Good.
Sita has his hand up.
Agreed.
Then see if Shiva can talk.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, between now and next meeting, is there a possibility that the group could open up for a few more participants? I see that we have a list of about 25 names, of which only about six people... The rest of the participants are from business constituencies.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Between now and the next meeting, is there a possibility that we can invite more members from at large or from NCUC?
This group is open. Should people choose to join us, they are welcome.
Okay, it's still open.
I have repeatedly invited people.
And just to add, a few new names have been added to the list but haven't been updated yet on the wiki, so we do, I think, have now some representatives as well from the IPC constituency. Hmm. So I'll update that ahead of the next call.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else before we close?
Please close. We have less than 35 seconds to get on to the next call, Alan.
I thank you all for your participation. And thank you, Marika, for the marvelous job you're doing.
You're welcome.
Thanks all. Bye.
Bye.
What are you still doing here at 6 a.m.?